Hey there, everybody. Steve Dale's Other World on a Sunday afternoon. I don't know. I look outside. I don't see a lot of people walk along the Riverwalk. I don't know why that's the case. Now Chicago Blackhawk hockey at 1:30, the Blackhawks and the Stars. And that'll be heard, of course, right here on WGN. Dr. Richard Novak, principal investigator for Moderna vaccine, head of the Division of Infectious Diseases at University of Illinois Health. Welcome to the show, Dr. Novak.
Thanks very much for having me. Pleased to be here.
Well, it's good to talk to you again. And I'll start with about a zillion texts that I received and through social media. And in essence, this is the question. I know about the campaigns about getting vaccinated, targeting people with vaccine hesitancy. But the problem is, I can't get a vaccine. And I will tell you, question after question after question after question, that's essentially what folks are asking. Do you have any answer?
Well, there is a really limited supply of vaccine still, and that's the big problem. There are a lot of large programs rolling out to administer vaccine. We at UI Health have a mass vaccination center open now at the Credit One Union One Arena, where we're vaccinating 1,000 people a day, but the rate limiting step is the amount of vaccine. The vaccine supply is limited, and right now we're in phase 1B, which means that people who are over the age of 65 or essential workers can get vaccinated, but it's not yet open to the general public.
Yeah, but these are even people, you know, I mean, I've spoken to people I know whose father-in-law, whatever it may be, is like 93 years old, and that person can't seem to get a vaccine. Incidentally, I want to ask you about the Moderna vaccine in particular, which is the one that you worked on, and thank you for doing that, by the way. What about not being able to get a second dose? So they show up, and there's no dose available. That's happened. Or maybe they aren't able to show up or cancel the appointment for whatever reason.
Well, that has been a problem. When vaccine centers schedule somebody for a vaccine, they're supposed to, at the time of the first shot, schedule the second appointment, and they should have adequate supply to be able to provide that. That should be part of their system. Unfortunately, not everybody's as organized as they should be in terms of maintaining that. You do get some protection from the first dose, but ideally you want to get both doses to be fully protected.
All right, so we've just started here. We have, I think, 4,000 phone calls. Our phone lines are filled. You could text as well, 312-981-7200. Dr. Richard Novak is here. We're talking about the Moderna vaccine on WGN. With us as a special, I'd say, guest, Dr. Richard Novak, principal investigator for Moderna vaccine, head of the Division of Infectious Diseases at University of Illinois Health. And we're going to the phones, Dr. Novak. And Pam, you're up first. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thank you for taking my call,
of
Dr.
course.
Novak. I'm just wondering if someone with AFib and chronic heart failure should get the Moderna or not, because I've heard the first dose, they're usually fine, but I do know people after the second dose of Pfizer or Moderna that have gotten very ill.
All right, good question. So, Dr. Novak?
Well, thanks for that, Pam. There is some truth to the fact that you're going to experience some side effects after the second dose, if you're going to at all. It's usually dependent on how old you are. So the older you are, the less likely you are to have the side effects.
Why is that, Dr. Novak? I was going to ask you about that. I've heard that is the case.
Well, that's because as we get older, we just don't mount as vigorous an inflammatory response as we do when we're younger. And so the side effects related to inflammation, like fever and body aches. So I had the Pfizer vaccine, which was what we had available, and I really had no significant side effects myself because of my age after the second dose. But my wife had the Pfizer, and she had terrible side effects. So she was with fever and body aches for about 24 hours. So I
think that's ironic. You helped create the Moderna vaccine, or at least led a trial for it, and you ended up getting the Pfizer vaccine.
Well, that's because the Pfizer was available first, and so because I'm a frontline worker, I was one of the first to get the vaccine, and that's what we had. Frankly, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines are about equally efficacious, and they're nearly identical, and they have very similar success and side effects. The advantage of the Moderna is really that it's easier to transport. It doesn't have the same rigorous storage requirements. It doesn't need to be kept in a ultra-cold freezer. And so it's easier to distribute, and so neighborhood pharmacies are more likely to have the Moderna vaccine when they get the vaccine available. The Pfizer vaccine really has to be administered from a major medical center that has those ultra-cold freezers.
I understand there are two ways you can get these adverse events, particularly for the second vaccine, as you point out. One is the minimal number of people, as it turns out so far, that have had any allergic response, and if that happens, that happens quickly. The other source of adverse events, and you described some of them, I've read that they happen typically after the second injection, but 15 hours or so later. Is that true? And if so, why?
Yeah, it takes a while for your body to mount that inflammatory response I talked about. And so it doesn't happen immediately. It usually starts anywhere from 8 to 15 hours later. And then it usually lasts for 12 to 24 hours. Sometimes it can be less, sometimes more. It's like if you feel like you have the flu for a brief period of time, and you treat it with Tylenol or ibuprofen, preferably Tylenol, and it's short lived. It's not terribly severe. It's certainly worse than having no symptoms, but it's also a lot better than getting COVID-19.
Indeed, several texts about the variants or mutations are the vaccines that are available now in the United States. Those variants and mutations are here. We don't know how many are here or exactly where they are specifically for sure. Are these vaccines going to cover these variants or mutations that we've seen so far?
Well, the good news is the short answer is yes, they do cover. All the vaccines that are available now will cover the variants. They're not quite as effective against the variants as they are against the original Wuhan virus, but they're almost as effective against the UK variant, which is the one that we have most in the United States. The other variants, like the one in South Africa, is more resistant, but still the vaccines are effective. The good news is that even though you might get a mild case of COVID if you get the variant, the vaccines are 100% effective in protecting you from serious illness or death. And it's a strong motivator to take the vaccine regardless.
Indeed, yes. Penny, you are on WGN. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I'm so nervous. I read in a health magazine that gargling will, if not kill 100%, a large percentage of the virus germ in your throat. If it's true, why isn't gargling promoted along with wearing a mask, washing our hands, stuff like that? Why is that not included ever?
Dr. Novak?
I think that while that sounds like it would be a great idea to do that, and maybe it would work, we make recommendations based on controlled clinical studies, not just on suggestions or possible efficacy. They really have to be proven. In a controlled trial of gargling, for example, you'd have to do a study where half the people gargled and the other half didn't, or you gargled with something like plain water, or there'd have to be a control of some kind, and then you'd have to show in that type of study that gargling with something like peroxide or something would be beneficial. It's quite plausible because we know there are a lot of things that we can use as a gargle that will kill virus. We just don't know if that reduces shedding or alters your risk of transmission.
I would suggest there's
That makes sense.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you,
yes.
Penny. I would suggest there's no downside to that. However, the virus also comes up through our nose, and I don't know that you can gargle that way exactly.
That would be challenging.
Yes.
You can lavage your nose, but that would be really unpleasant.
Indeed, and I'm not sure, as you point out, about the effectiveness of all that. Do you have any idea about the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen vaccine to come and when that might happen? And the efficacy we've heard about in the news doesn't quite seem to be up to Moderna or Pfizer, but does that mean we should have any question about taking it?
So we actually participated in that study as well, and it's the results are somewhat less effective than Pfizer and Moderna. However, the trial has gone on as a big international study, and it did take place in a number of countries where they do have variants, which does might influence its efficacy. It is very effective at protecting against serious illness and death, and protecting against hospitalization from COVID. And so it's also a single dose vaccine. It's much easier to store and transport. And so it's going to have a lot of advantages. The level of efficacy is much higher even than we had predicted when we started these studies, because we were looking for vaccines that were 50% effective. And so that's my long answer. The short answer is, if you can get it, absolutely, I would take that vaccine.
So very quickly, it would be great if we could just pop a pill. So, all right, you've been diagnosed with COVID, and now there's this magic pill. Are we at the same time working on therapeutics?
Well, actually, there are a number of therapeutics that are in the works. We do have the drug remdesivir, which is actually now FDA approved for inpatient treatment. It's an antiviral drug. There are some oral antivirals in development that could be used in an outpatient setting before you need to be hospitalized. And we have monoclonal antibodies, which have already been shown to be effective at making the disease less severe in people who are not yet hospitalized, keeping people out of the hospital. So we do have some therapeutic options. In fact, those antibodies are now available by emergency use authorization. And if you get sick with coronavirus, you can call your doctor or call one of the major medical centers, and they do, as we do, have those antibodies available for treatment.
Well, they are hard to come by, and dispensing those, I mean, doesn't that have to be done via IV, the monoclonal antibodies?
They do. We actually have an infusion center set up just for that purpose. Because of limited supply, we have some restrictions on who we're going to treat with that, and it falls into the people who are at higher risk for getting seriously ill with coronavirus, like the elderly and people with chronic medical conditions. We can't just offer it to the general public because we just don't have enough. But I hope that makes sense.
Yep, it makes sense, Dr. Novak. We're out of time, but thank you very much. It's great talking to you again. Principal investigator for Moderna Vaccine, head of the Division of Infectious Diseases at University of Illinois Health. Thank you very much, and we hope to talk to you again.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Novak.